We're going to resume our meeting. I see the impairment team sitting here.
Yep.
Does that mean we're going to talk the impairment?
Yes, the last time before.
Would you like to talk about something else?
Is that a firm commitment?
Decisions today, so it's all in your hands.
Please go ahead.
Morning. Well, we have three papers today. We're going to discuss a sweep issue related to transition requirements. We're going to analyze the due process. And finally, we're going to discuss re-exposure, the proposed comment period, and then we will request permission to begin balloting. So I'd like to begin with the sweep issue in paper 5A. The sweep issue provides a single wording update to the impairment model's transition requirements in order to align them with the new lifetime loss criteria that we decided upon tentatively in the last board meeting. Now, I'd like to emphasize that this update doesn't change the substance of any of the transition requirements, but is merely a wording change to account for last month's decisions. Does the board agree with this update?
Well, I just one small question, and that is the word only. If you go to paragraph 8, and it says, financial assets to be evaluated only on the basis of whether credit quality is below. Could you just elaborate on that word only? What other possibilities would there be that we would be prohibiting or with that word only?
Well, if you take a look at Appendix A, if there is not an undue cost required to obtain such information, what the entity would do is try to determine the credit quality at initial recognition and use that as their basis for the transition to determine whether it's 12-month or lifetime expected loss. So when we say only, we're removing that option.
Stephen?
When we talked about this, I expressed some concern about having a lot of banks book lifetime losses on transition. You end up with a situation then in subsequent periods because you would move to applying the model for new loans and the allowance balance would therefore decline and you would overstate profitability during that period. And of course, setting the absolute threshold at investment grade means that on transition, many banks will have all or substantially all of their portfolio potentially on a lifetime loss basis if they don't have information about credit quality at transition. And the clarification of the investment grade threshold, or what we did last time, sort of kind of exacerbates that maybe because of where we put that threshold. The other thing is that last time we made this 30 days past due approach for the retail. And it seems to me that if we carry on with this, the retail portfolios for which it's unlikely you will have the credit quality information at initial recognition, a lot of those would be put on lifetime loss at transition. Even though we've given this practical expedient, we said it's okay to use just delinquency. So if all you've got is delinquency information, why can't we say if they're not past due at transition, they're in bucket one? If they are past due at transition, they're in bucket two.
For things that you'd assess on that basis?
Yeah. For things that you would assess on that basis, rather than chucking them all into lifetime loss because you don't have the information about credit quality at initial recognition.
Yeah.
And if we've done that for retail, it leaves a group of loans for which I think that it's more likely that you would be able to find the information to apply in the model. And I'm concerned about giving, in effect, a free choice about whether you go and hunt for information or not. And therefore, for a bank that happened to be well capitalized, there's an incentive not to hunt for that information, to take the transition hit and then build profits thereafter.
Now we had this discussion obviously when we did the original transition discussion at that time we were actually hoping that the incentive would work in the opposite direction, that you'd be incentivized to collect the information so you didn't have to recognise lifetime losses, and we were hoping there was a positive incentive. And based on the very limited feedback I've had so far, some people are saying it's worth hunting for the information for poorer quality assets to avoid that lifetime loss effect. But you're putting the counter view, obviously, which would be, I guess, if you did have enough capital, there might be temptation to book lifetime losses on transition to create a cookie jar, if you like, to manage going forward. And maybe the interaction with the banking regulations as well and what they do with the transition allowances might affect the amount to which that's an incentive. But I think the 30-day cut sounds like quite sensible for things you're assessing.
Yeah, because I think you should assess deterioration, and if you assess deterioration for those assets in a way based on delinquencies, that's only consistent with our criterion. So maybe it's just clarifying that in addition to what we're doing here.
Yeah, I think so, because it already says if you have the information, you should be doing the proper analysis.
Yeah.
So it'd be saying if you're going to make the assessment based on deterioration, you do have the information, therefore you have to do it properly.
Can you, Philippe, confirm something to me? I'm puzzled. The criteria at transition, if you don't have historical information, is whether or not this loan is investment grade. That's what we propose here. So it seems to me that if you assess a loan as being above investment grade at transition, you are not permitted to take a full lifetime loss.
That's right.
Yeah.
So this effect of trying to charge the opening situation with extra provisions is not permitted under this transition system. So what Steve is saying, that maybe a 30-day criteria of past due can help in determining whether you have to assess the loan as being impaired or not. But it seems to me that the investment grade criteria is a stronger.
They're two separate.
How would that work? You would add a 30 days indicator, or do we replace the investment grade status with a 30 days?
I'm not saying, obviously, if something is above investment grade at transition, I'm not arguing with the proposal. What I'm saying is that many banks will be in a position where all or a substantial part of their portfolio will be sub investment grade at transition. Particularly if it's retail.
Yeah.
And so it's good. It was those loans that I was concerned about.
Yeah. Isn't it what we are looking for, that they have the proper amount of allowances if the loans are below investment grade?
The proper amount of allowances for loans below investment grade depend upon what their credit quality was at origination and what's happened since.
Yeah. And many
the appropriate
of
amount of the allowance may not be the full lifetime loss, which is what you could get as a result of this transition.
But I think, Steve, so could we deal with your issue by clarifying that if you're basing your analysis on delinquencies, that you should use that information?
I think that would be a significant improvement to the transition requirements.
That would be also what I would say, because if a bank would say, okay, I would use delinquency to really as a easier measure to measure the deterioration of some loans, you cannot say a transition.
Yeah,
it is undue cost because I don't have this information. So I really don't see that a bank can make this kind of case for retail loans where they use going forward a delinquency. Yeah. And we should maybe.
But I guess we can just be clear about it and just clarify it. But I think also it follows from that.
And by the way, I'm not so sure that there are a lot of banks that are so well capitalized that they can create this cookie jar.
Well, there would be a big incentive to take steps to recapitalize prior to introduction of this standard.
Yeah. Okay. But I think we've got this cleared up now.
Yeah.
All right. Proceed.
Does anybody disagree?
Yes. Is there any disagreement around the table? No? Okay.
The second agenda paper, 5B, analyzes the ISB's compliance with due process requirements. As the ISB tentatively finalized its technical decisions last month, this paper analyzes the due process steps necessary to begin the balloting process of the re-exposure draft. The paper is composed of a project history that analyzes the steps taken and feedback received since the original ED, along with an analysis of how the ISB has met due process requirements as outlined in the due process handbook. These are composed of mandatory, non-mandatory, and other optional steps, which are listed in the body of the paper and in Appendix A. The ISB, I would like to note, the staff intend to undertake some field work in conjunction with the exposure process, We believe that this will be best achieved by working closely with a small number of institutions in different jurisdictions. The primary objective of this field work would be to assess and illustrate the benefits of a dual measurement approach. In addition, we would like to solicit views on the cost and operability of the proposals. In the staff's view, the ISB has complied with all requirements necessary to begin the balloting process. Do you agree with our view that due process has been met?
By God,
and
yes.
Are there any further steps you think are necessary?
By God, yes.
So what I can say that is in the last Financial Stability Board meeting in which I participated by telephone from Kathmandu and Ian was there in person, that there was a strong sense that it might be a case of overdue process here. But anyway. Does anybody want to raise concerns about due process, or do we agree with the staff's conclusion?
I'd like a clarification. Paragraph 34, you mentioned that the translations team will be included in the review. I'd like to know what's the practical implication. Are we going to do some translations on the exposure map, or paragraph 34, you said translations on the experience teams will be included in the review. Do we intend to have any translations for the exposure map?
It's just part of the general due process requirements. I don't believe that there will be a translation.
Well, the reason why we try and include the translation team very early on is if we're using words that are going to be very difficult to translate, we like to get that feedback earlier rather than later, not because we're actually going to translate the ED. And also we want to understand how the disclosure look requirements look when they're turned into XBRL speak, so we understand what they look like.
It's very early, I understand. I wasn't sure about translation.
Okay,
do we agree with the staff's recommendation? Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Not so much a recommendation as an appraisal. Okay, go ahead, Chiron.
On to agenda paper 5C. The due process handbook sets out the requirements for considering whether there is a need for re-exposure. In analyzing the feedback received on the original ED and the SD, the IASB identified substantial issues which it has sought to address in the current proposed model. Because the proposed model differs from the ED and the SD, and because there has not been a due process document that sufficiently addresses the feedback received, nor that provides discussion and a basis for conclusions, we recommend that the IASB re-expose the proposals. Do you agree with this recommendation?
I agree.
Does anybody disagree? No disagreements. Okay.
As for the comment period, typically a period of 60 days is permitted on the re-exposure draft, according to the due process handbook. However, due to the number of changes in the proposed model and because the staff proposed to undertake field work during the exposure process, we recommend a comment period of 120 days as is standard for an original exposure draft. Do you agree with this?
Anybody disagree?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah. Stephen?
So how will this overlap with the FASB proposals?
Well, the FASB currently plan to get their model out before the end of the year. Their proposed comment letter period is the latter of 120 days or April 30th, 2013.
And we're planning to publish the exposure draft toward the end of February, if everything goes according to plan, so we'll have about a two-month overlap period. And I think we're planning to do some joint outreach during that period.
Yeah, and to Steve's point, the Financial Stability Board again emphasised that we should work as closely as possible with FASB on this, and including
outreach
and including analysing the feedback.
With a view to getting to a converged answer?
Yes. From their point of view.
That
yes.
would obviously be their desire.
Yeah.
And ours as well.
So the timing is important. We can't afford to let this slip too far or we'll be right out of step.
The good thing that this comment period will be outside of the year-end closing. It will come after the closing of the book, so people will be able to concentrate on this project.
Okay. Final question, I think, or No. First, we have to grant you permission to start drafting the ballot draft.
Yes.
Yes, I would say that follows.
Start before lunch.
Might have started already.
And then finally, does any ISB member intend to dissent from the proposal? Stephen?
I'm not sure whether I'm going to dissent or not. I haven't made a final decision. My inclination is not to, because I think what we have is a significant improvement. Having said that, though, I do have some concerns, which the staff know about. I think the model is a better model in many respects because I think it gives an appropriate recognition of lifetime losses for the assets for which those lifetime losses are appropriate. I like the purchase credit impaired. I like the disclosures. There are many things I like about it. I think it would be a significant improvement. I think there are operational challenges. But I think we've overcome many of those through the changes that we've made. Clearly, there will be a cost to implement, but I think we've kept that manageable. I think it's a significantly better model than the FASB has, so all of these things I like. The concern I have, of course, is the 12-month allowance, and I've had that concern all the way along. I felt we should have rethought that following the FASB decision. I think it has a day one effect. We complain about the FASB day one effect. I think this has a day one effect. I think it's conceptually flawed. I think it produces the odd answer for fair value OCI. I think we produce double counting for trade receivables with a significant financing component. I think it produces double counting elsewhere as well. So I have a lot of concerns about that 12-month allowance. I have other minor concerns, the choice that we're giving on leasing and trade receivables. I don't like that free choice, but it's the day one. It's the 12-month allowance that is a particular concern. Of course, I'm also concerned we don't have convergence, but then I'm not sure that's entirely our fault, that we don't have that convergence. So I haven't made a final decision. What I would ask is that we, in writing the document, consider the future, because clearly there will be pressure to converge. Clearly, we may well come to a different point, particularly on the 12-month allowance. So I'm hoping that we can write the basis in such a way that we explain these alternatives and give a sort of full description to make sure that if we do make changes post-ED, that we can actually get a document finalized.
Steve, what's the alternative?
My alternative would be to not have the 12-month allowance.
Then what day one will...
Perfect.
I guess the
listen. I think we.
It's a good change.
Having witnessed at least half of the process of getting to this standard, I do recollect that the whole board had a severe hiccup about this 12-month day one loss. That we didn't like it because it is conceptually flawed, and we know that. But we were willing to take that, to overcome that problem or to swallow it, first of all, because we were in the process of reaching some kind of convergence with the FESB. Well, that moment has unfortunately passed. But we were where we were, and it was not very simple to come up with a simple and better solution for this issue. So I fully understand Stephen's problems there. There are conceptual issues. Fortunately, quantitatively, our conceptual flaw is a lot smaller than what we the current FESB problem proposal is. Let's see how that is going to be received. But I do understand Stephen's concerns, and you don't always have to have a better answer to have to still have concerns. I think most of us feel that all in all, given also the advantages that Stephen just sketched about this model, that it is an acceptable compromise. I understand why this is difficult.
The effect analysis that you will probably publish at the same time as the basis for conclusions, can you highlight how this 12-month allowance creates some degree of convergence with FASB's model, some degree of convergence.
That's a We can try.
We're to bridge a little bit or to bring the two models closer to each other.
I don't think the purpose of the 12-month allowance, I guess, is to have something in there partly in absence because in the absence of any deterioration without the 12-month allowance, no allowance would be booked. If you remember, under the original ED, over time, something would be built up implicitly through the yield adjustment.
This is an expedient for the yield adjustment.
So this was just a practical way of having an amount.
I'm not trying to ask you to justify
it's
conceptually.
The effect. Yeah.
It's about the effect analysis. What will happen in practice if you apply the FSB's model, all day one loss, if you apply our model with some day one loss, how do the models differ in a way?
I think we can probably include some discussion in the document somewhere. I'm not sure where the best place is, but somewhere in the document about the situations where the outcomes would likely be fairly similar and the circumstances where the outcomes might be very different.
Yes.
And that's helpful, I think, to put in there as well because people will also react to that. And I think some of the questions we'll want to ask in the document should also try and help us get some more information about just how different is the 12-month measure to a lifetime measure? Because obviously we're objecting to where the FASB is largely on the basis of our understanding that there's a big difference between the effects of those two things. And the more information we have about that, the better positioned we are to have the discussion, including if we have more joint discussions with the FASB. That extra information is helpful.
And the Financial Stability Board was very strong on getting some quantitative information.
Which we'll try and do through the field work.
Yeah.
Can I just ask a question?
Okay.
I think, like Hans mentioned, it's a compromise. It's a hiccup we all trying to swallow. How do we mitigate to the point that all possibility to the best of our ability at this point in time to avoid any other new exposure drafts? In terms of that, how does the staff, if you started thinking about it, to take the TPA, which was floated as one of the possible things, and we talked in the last board meeting or the board meeting before. How do staff plan to, I would say, firewall the future need for it if we have to compromise with the FASB as desired by several people, including us? If we have to do that, I just don't want to have another ED and another 2 years wasted on this.
Well, I think in the basis, we're basically coming from the point of view that from the conceptual, the best faithful representation would have been the original ED, and then basically showing the alternatives we considered. Like, for example, we did last month in November, should we go for the TPA or should we go for the three-bucket model, and explain why we ended up at the three-bucket model. And in addition to that, asked also some questions on the alternative TPA that we discussed.
I think what I was driving at is that we should ask a few questions in addition to putting something in basis.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think basis should be a little bit more robust.
And
not just throwing a trial balloon, but something more robust so that we can come back and lean on that.
Yeah.
I think we should be very careful in thinking about that.
Yep.
I think it'll be quite a long
basis,
because I think we need to be very clear how we got where we are. We need to be very clear about.
In the beginning, there was.
But the TPA, but also I think we need to put quite a lot of discussion in there about why we have concerns with the full lifetime document. So one of the things we'll be trying to do, and something we sort of also suggested to the FASB staff, was when we see their document, we're going to try and respond to some of the comments they've made in there where we would disagree conceptually with some of the things they've said. And we've sort of tried to forewarn them what we might say so that they can try and address it in their document as well. Because I think the more fulsome this all is and the more that there's information about how we're both thinking about it,
Let's not beat about the bush.
And I think also Steve made a good comment last week when we had our meeting with our regular dialogue with the three-way dialogue with the IIF and the Basel regulators, where some of the international banks are trying to work out ways that they might be able to help us come to a converged solution. And he challenged them to be very careful that with any of the suggestions they might put forward as part of the exposure process, to think about the conceptual concerns that we've had with the various alternatives we've looked at. Don't just come and say, you know, we think the calculation should be using this formula, but why? And how could we line it up with our thinking? And I think we should encourage everybody who's responding to the document to be mindful of that, because we've spent so much time and we've been very clear about what we can live with and what we can't. So unless I've got something fundamental we've missed, it's quite hard to know what's new.
That's one more thing about the basis. Would you, you're going to describe and explain your views about the original ED, about the FASB model. What about the...
Your views.
Yeah.
Staff's views. Yeah.
What about the gross-up method that I've pushed in the past?
Is that not a variation of...
That's the variation on the original
ED. Of the original ED, I guess.
I think we could mention... But I think it was even mentioned in the original ID, wasn't it? If there's no material difference, I saw the other day. But anyway, I think it's just a different articulation of the original ID, so we could mention that.
I don't know.
There's no reason why we shouldn't.
Yeah, but I don't know how much we want to go down the path of, you know, looking at different ways that people could implement the original ED, because, I don't know, we've ended up somewhere different, but... There could be various ways.
Okay. I think this brings us to a conclusion of this meeting. The next meeting, FASB will attend by video, so...
1 hour.
Or at least the staff. Huh?
1 hour.
11:45.
11:45, we're going to...